The following podcast is brought to you by Podcast Your Passion, a simple, easy-to-follow course to help you to create the podcast you've always dreamed of. Visit bit.ly/pk-pyp today to find out how to create the podcast you've always wanted.
When Dylan was little, from the age of about three, I'd put him in a little wetsuit and a little life jacket, give him a water pistol, put him in a dinghy, board leash it to my ankle, and he would point down the coast where he'd want me to swim, and he'd squirt me with the water pistol if I stopped to ask how he was doing.
The joy of swimming. Conversations about open water swimming, hosted by Pat Kelman. Hello everyone and welcome to the Joy of Swimming podcast. My name is Pat Kelman. We've got a great episode today where I'm joined by British marathon swimmer Beth French and German filmmaker Stefan Stuckart to talk about their new film that's coming out on March the 1st on video on demand here in the UK called Against the Tides. It's a phenomenal documentary about Beth's attempt to set out to swim across seven of the world's most dangerous sea channels, an extreme challenge called Ocean 7, and do it in record time within a year. And in the film, driven by her desire to set an example for her autistic son and to overcome a lifelong debilitating illness, Beth travels to far-flung corners of the world, facing hypothermia, sharks, jellyfish, wild weather, and mind-numbing fatigue, as well as her own inner demons. But in an unpredictable and emotional climax, Beth's yearning to conquer the open sea comes into heart-rending conflict with a mother's dreams for her son. It's an extraordinary film, and I thought everybody who listens to the podcast would be really interesting because, A, the footage of the swimming is just phenomenal, and the challenge itself is just extraordinary. But also, it's a really beautiful human drama about a woman facing her own personal demons, but also her son's needs and wishes. And it's a really beautiful piece of work. For those of you unfamiliar with the Ocean 7 Challenge, it consists of seven long-distance open water swims across the most dangerous sea channels in the world. And for extreme swimmers, it's the ultimate test. It's the equivalent of climbing the seven summits in mountaineering. And at the time of making the film, only six people had ever completed the challenge. So the channels are the Catalina Channel in the USA, and it's featuring strong winds, fierce currents, and swimmers often encounter large marine life, including migrating whales and dolphins. The next one is the Molokai Channel in Hawaii, which is the longest. It's 28 miles. The water's warm, but it's got brisk winds, heavy currents, and aggressive marine life, such as sharks, and of course, huge Pacific waves. There's the Cook Strait in New Zealand, which covers 18 miles with really strong tides. Then there's the Strait of Gibraltar between Spain and Morocco. It's about 8 miles. It's a shorter cross, but with really unpredictable weather conditions and heavy freight traffic. Then there's the Suguru Strait in Japan, about 12 miles wide. And then there's the North Channel between Great Britain and Ireland. Yeah, that's got all sorts of things, unpredictable weather conditions, fields of lion's mane jellyfish, and of course there's the English Channel, which we all know about, referred to often as the Everest of swims, 22 miles long, one of the busiest shipping lanes in the world, and some of the biggest tidal shifts in the world as well. So there are the seven channels. It's a really remarkable interview with Beth and Stefan, and to give you an idea of what the film is like, we're going to play the trailer for you, then we'll go straight into the interview. I hope you enjoy it.
Ocean 7 is a list of channels around the world that basically take a swimmer apart. Five people have completed the list in their lifetimes. I'm going to be the first person to attempt to do it in a single year.
We're going to have the hypothermia risk. We're going to have jellyfish in every swim that she does, sharks, strong currents, fatigue.
She's swimming for 14 hours, 16 hours. I can't really imagine doing anything for 14 hours straight.
Fingers crossed.
Beth is pretty tired being sick now.
My biggest fear is Beth not completing it and not bringing her back.
Dylan is the reason that I'm doing the seven swims, to teach him that you can fulfill your potential and overcome your fears and your boundaries.
Mum, give us a thumbs up, yeah.
She's a single parent. It's maybe something she should do when Dylan's older.
There's a forecast coming up to Thorn 10. It's not far away from that now.
If you do see sharks out there, we want you to put this on your ankle.
Beth has been a wonderful member of the community in this village.
Beth will never say she's had enough. Beth will go on and on.
There's a shark! Shark!
Beth!
Just like that. Yeah. Today I'm joined by Beth French and Stefan Stuckert, who are the subject and the director of an excellent new documentary film called Against the Tides, which is available on demand from March the 1st. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Beth, would you like to introduce the film and what it's about?
Sure. Against the Tides is it's an amazingly beautiful documentary that was made around my project to attempt to swim Ocean 7 in a single year. And Ocean 7 is a list of channels around the world, sort of dictated by World Open Water Swimming Association. And all of the different channels have different sort of difficulties and different challenges. So basically, it's designed to sort of really sort of test a swimmer as a complete whole. And so the film is the story of why on earth a self-employed single mum from Somerset should ever even attempt to try and do it, because nobody's ever even attempted to swim all seven in a year before. So it's a story of how I came to believe that I could try and do it, and then what happened when I did.
Stefan, how did you hear about the project, or how did you, you know, hear about Beth in the first place and want to make a film?
Yeah, I'm a keen swimmer. I grew up in open water as a kid in the rivers and canals and lakes of North Germany. So I was very interested in making a film about it, about swimming. And I came across, I came across Lynn Cox's book, Swimming to Antarctica, which I don't know if people have read it or not, but it's a really a very inspiring book. I was really, really taken by it. But logistically, it was difficult, of course, because she's based in the US. So I was looking to a kind of film to make. And then a friend introduced me to Beth, and he'd heard about her. She lives in a village nearby where he lives in Somerset, and so he heard about this swimmer in Somerset that was going to take on Ocean 7, which is the most extreme swimming challenge. It's the equivalent to the Seven Peaks in mountaineering. So it's very, very, very few people have done it. It's testing. It's an extreme swim challenge. So he introduced me to Beth, and so I came to her house. In documentary making, filmmaking, especially present tense with the protagonist, if it's not subject driven, the relationship between the person you're making the film about and the filmmaker is really critical. So we had a really great introduction where Dylan is Beth's son. They had a pillow fight before I arrived. So when I opened the door, this pillow just came straight at me. So I was immediately introduced in this pillow fight. So that was a really great into this journey and being sort of immediately taken and led into Beth's life and into her family life. And then we spent the rest of the afternoon really talking about Beth's life. And also her Ocean 7, the Ocean 7 challenge, which I didn't know that much about at that time. So I was incredibly inspired talking to Beth. She was, as she mentioned, she was very ill as a teenager, spent a lot of time in the bed, in the wheelchair. And it was this her sort of power of overcoming the illness. And on the one hand, the sort of human side, and on this other side, this sort of epic quest of of going around the world and swimming these incredibly challenging channels was the sort of other half. So these two counter poles in a way. And I thought it would make a fantastic film to have these sort of two elements. Yeah, and plus on top of it, you had Dylan in the middle there. So this idea of a mother and her son attempting this was also very interesting. So I decided to go for it, go for that journey, for our journey of making the
Amazing.
Film.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is most impressive about the film is that combination of the epic quest and the very personal journey and the relationship that you have, Beth, with your son Dylan, but also with your team who you build around you to accompany you and support you on this journey. But also your backstory as well, which is so inspiring as well. If the film was just about that would be inspiring enough. So could you just share with me about kind of like what got you into swimming in the first place and how it kind of relates to your backstory?
Sure. I mean, I was brought up on the farm in the middle of nowhere in Somerset and pre-digital age. So there's not a single photograph of me under the age of 5 where I'm not sat in a bucket of water or a stream or a puddle or the washing up bowl. So I was kind of the veritable kind of water babe. And I really sort of sought it out in all kind of manners and very, very outdoorsy. My family are active, but completely unathletic. You know, it's all very much a practical form of athleticism in the sense that we have to, you know, lump bales of hay around and muck out animals. But when I was 10, I was struck down with a kind of an unknown, unquantifiable illness where I was just incredibly fatigued. My glands were up and I was in a huge amount of pain. And my whole adolescence, right the way up until I was about 17, it was kind of marred by these complete troughs where I would sort of hit a pit where I couldn't even sort of brush my own hair, couldn't even raise my hand to brush my teeth. And I was racked with this incredible pain. And it wasn't until I was 17 when I was in a wheelchair for almost a year and bedridden where I was retrospectively diagnosed with ME, chronic fatigue syndrome. And during those 7 years, the only time where I wasn't sort of in pain was when I was in water and I could sort of, you know, sit in a warm bath, which was quite relaxing. But actually getting in cold water was so beneficial, the anti-inflammatory aspect of it. I could literally sort of feel the kind of the heat and the pain in my joints kind of being leached out of me. And it was also a place where I felt like my body was being given back to me. So water became this complete refuge for me. When I started, I mean, obviously it was a hugely long journey. It took me from being in the wheelchair, it took me nearly 2 decades to tackle something, you know, big and I mean, I still struggle with trusting my body. And I think for me, the Ocean 7 project was this culmination of this quest that I went on of A, feeling compelled to push myself because I had been told that I would never be able to do and I didn't trust my body. But then also to learn to trust my body, to prove to myself that I could put faith in my body, in my resilience, in how strong I was, in my stamina. Because life terrified me. You know, I never knew if I was going to get ill tomorrow. So yes, my backstory literally led me to feeling compelled to push myself. And water was my natural forum for that because it's where the world made sense. And being face down in the water for hours on end, you know, you really do just have this kind of internal monologue. And so that quest to find your own voice is absolutely, you know, the freedom of being in the water, the joy of being able to have my joints feel supported, of, you know, being moved by the water, of watching the sunlight kind of diffuse through the sea, all made sense to me. So yes, the channel swimming kind of became this natural way that I wanted to move towards health.
That's something that I've found very much with the sea and with swimming generally in open water is that release of physical boundaries almost in a way. Things that I find, you know, me being a heavy guy and joint pain and whatever, but also my friend Katie, who kind of reintroduced me to the sea, has a history of fibromyalgia and finds the sea enormously healing in that respect. But for me, it's a mental healing that I find in the water particularly. It's very much that kind of thing. So I really very much relate to what you were saying about things about that sense of being at home, I guess, that I found.
Absolutely. I think that's something that, you know, yes, we all came from the sea, you know, evolutionarily. But actually, you know, when you talk about being in the womb, you know, you're sort of in this kind of space of just in your own mind and in your own body. But then you know, we're all sort of questing to find our own selves and our own sense of self. And yes, being in the water, you have this gentle kind of temperature pressure and resistance pressure of the water. And the sea is this natural moving body as well. So your whole body becomes this sense organ in and of itself that you have to be present as well. You know, it's something that's naturally you are brought to being mindful because you can't ignore it. You do feel, I mean, particularly in England, where our water temperature is never, you know, never hot, getting in cool water, you are brought into the present moment and, you know, you are made to feel your breath. You are made to feel every inch of your body. And then your mind has nothing else to worry about. You, all you have to do is breathe. And it's such a beautiful space to be in. And it was really quite sort of, yes, in some ways hedonistic to actually spend my time training, playing in the water. And I was never, I'm not a sports type athlete. So my training often looked like play, where I would duck and dive and spin and just be in the water and spend time in the water. You don't have to sort of sprint for 6 hours because you're never going to sprint for 6 hours. You know, you're going to swim at a comfortable speed. So you may as well be ducking and diving and actually building those differences, just the sense of being in the water, which I found hugely beneficial to being able to spend 19 hours swimming. You have to enjoy it. You have to be engaged in your environment.
Absolutely. And that kind of leads us neatly into that idea of how on earth do you prepare for a phenomenal feat like this, a challenge like this, both physically and mentally? And I guess also, like, how do you get the money to do it, you know, the support to do it?
So physically, I chose to spend a very prolonged period of time training. I didn't do any short, sharp trainings. So lots of people, if they are masters swimming clubs or they do competitive swimming, you know, you train every day or you train sometimes train twice a day to build up your speed. I wasn't looking to build up speed. I was looking to build up stamina. And because of my history of not being able to do things consistently, I trained very differently. And when Dylan was little, from the age of about three, I'd put him in a little wetsuit and a little life jacket, give him a water pistol, put him in a dinghy, board leash it to my ankle, and he would point down the coast where he'd want me to swim, and he'd squirt me with a water pistol if I stopped and asked how he was doing. And as he got bigger, I got stronger. And, you know, it became this kind of very joyful process where, you know, in the swimming pool, he would sit on my hips and make me swim lengths. And I tell you what, you build up a lot of strength with, you know, a 4, 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old, you know, sitting on your hips and holding onto your ankles. So it became this kind of joyful physical process of finding a way to love my body that I used to hate and feel trapped in. Now I took joy in, I can tow my son and we're having a laugh, and it became, I loved my body for what it could do. And mentally, I mean, having been in a wheelchair and having been restricted and feeling relentlessness as a negativity, the joy of swimming for 6 hours, of it being relentless, but in a positive way, was a really sort of a positive cathartic cycle I could get on. And the money side, oh my goodness, that, I mean, to do the Ocean 7 project took me 5 years of planning and saving and building, you know, building sort of backlog and putting aside money on a regular basis of, you know, making sure that we had enough, but there was an adventure fund that was constantly building. It took a long time.
For those that don't know about the Ocean 7, I mean, it's all over the world. So we've got Scotland, we've got New Zealand, we've got California, we've got Hawaii, Japan. That's quite a feat. Stefan, for yourself, in terms of actually getting the film off the ground, I mean, obviously, this is a swimming podcast, so people probably aren't that interested in the intricacies of international film finance, though I am, of course. was it a challenging project for you to get support for?
Yes, very much so, yeah. I mean, the journey, I think the logistics and the financing mirrors the challenge for Beth to get Ocean 7 off the ground. Is there were being a present tense documentary is always risky, I think, because you don't know if the story unfolds in front of the camera. Is always difficult because you don't know where it's going to go. But doing a present tense documentary about a single mother swimming the most extreme swimming challenge, Ocean Seven, and do all of them in a year, which had never been done before, finances were very touchy. You know, what if she doesn't? What if she doesn't finish? You know, what if she gets ill? So there were a lot of struggles to get the money together, and there were a lot of times where we didn't have any cash, and we had to put our own money into the project. We kept it always very separate. You know, I think that for both of us, I think it was very important that Beth was doing her Ocean 7 challenge. We were doing our film, so it didn't turn into like a promotional film. It was really like the idea of making a film about this incredible athlete that is trying to do this incredible quest. And so that was really important for us to keep it separate. So it was a real journey, and sometimes it worked well, and other times it wasn't. It was a bit like doing a channel swim. You know, the current would take us some way, and we constantly had to adapt and adjust to it. But yeah, it was the making was tough. The post-production was tough. And the distribution, as you probably know, coming is even harder. You know, it's a British independent filmmaking. It's not very well funded. So it's a really difficult. And then on top of it, obviously, there come the challenges of the actual filming, of actually doing it, you know, filming for 19 hours on the sea, and how to capture Beth's struggles during the swim, being face down in the water. And also there's a sort of other set of challenges there. But in terms of financing, yeah, it was it was not easy.
One of the things that really struck me was the really high production value of the film. I mean, it looks beautiful, you know.
No, thank you.
And
thank
you know, it doesn't look like. I mean, we've all seen lots of kind of fly on the wall verite documentaries where the camera's kind of moving around all the time, and it looks like it's shot on a camcorder almost. But this is really beautiful, and I can only imagine what it would look like on a big screen.
That's what I loved about it. It was designed for the big screen. And when we first met Stefan, and he talked about sort of the artistic vision, because both he and the executive producer, Noel, who originally I'd met, they were both sort of artistic photography background, kind of, you know, they had this image, and they talked about, you know, wanting to capture what it's like being face down in the water and then drawing the camera away and seeing the expanse of water. I wanted that film to be made, even if it wasn't me in it. And they talked about being desperate to make a cinematic film because the ocean, I mean, we all of us swimmers, we know that the water is beautiful, and we're all trying to capture that in different ways, whether it's through a podcast or through photography or through art. We all get drawn to trying to express what water means to us. And so, yes, seeing it on a big screen, you know, is incredible. And the biggest TV you've got, that's how you want to watch it, because it is. It's so immersive. It's beautiful. It's beautifully shot.
Thank you, Beth.
Easiest advert ever. I mean, it's a stunning thing. And I mean, some of my friends who are swimmers who got to see some of the early releases of it, you know, they just said, oh, Beth, can you get them to do a DVD just of the water shots? Because it's so beautiful watching water with the light. I mean, it's one of the easiest kind of cells of making a beautiful film is, filming the sea.
Those shots of the swimming in the sea, knowing what I know about filmmaking, capturing shots like that that look really composed, unless, you know, if you're in a studio tank, yeah, fair enough. But if you're actually at sea, it's an extraordinary achievement, I thought.
Absolutely, especially considering that most of the crew, actually, not even their crew, my crew, most of the crew at some point were seasick for prolonged periods of time. So, you know, being seasick and still managing to hold cameras steady was just epic. And I know Stefan at one point said, oh, I feel a bit bad because, you know, I'm talking about how tired I feel and you're swimming. But to be honest, their focus of what they had to do was taxing in a whole different way. I had the easy job of swimming. You know, they had to be focused in a way that I didn't have to.
I mean, the idea of the quick picture quality, we worked a lot on at the beginning of working on the right camera, because it had to be a small camera, because we're on a small boat. It had to be, we worked on stabilizers to keep it steady because of the constant movement. Mm-hmm. It had to be great at night because a lot of the swims are at nighttime. So we spent a lot of time did a lot of tests to find the best camera that would do all that and still give us the sort of great picture quality that we wanted. But, you know, Beth was swimming for a long time, so we had a lot of footage to choose from. You know, 19 hours, it is a bit like in the studio, and you can spend, we could spend a lot of time getting the perfect shot in a way.
But, sure.
So that's good. And we had a sort of film boat, our own film boat, so we could actually move around and really get all the different angles and really explore the space. And then, of course, we also had underwater, above water, so we were really able to explore the space over, you know, hours. So we could be picky in the cutting room, I think, in terms of finding the right footage.
Let's talk about the challenge itself. And what was the most compelling thing for you, Beth, when you were thinking about doing the challenge in the first place?
So my first channel was the English channel in 2012. And I thought it was going to be the hardest thing I ever did and the only time I ever did anything so stupid. And I thought it was going to answer my question, am I over ME? That's why I swam the English channel in 2012. And when I reached the other side on my first attempt, which I wasn't expecting, I had this kind of seismic shift inside me that whilst I became my own hero, because I had done this without support of my family, they thought I was mad and wrong for even trying to do it as a young single mum. I kind of also realized that I hadn't found it as hard as everyone had told me I should have felt it. So I felt like I hadn't tried hard enough or I hadn't reached the end. You know, I hadn't answered that question. I obviously hadn't, you know, found my edge. So I kind of felt this kind of rolling compulsion to push myself. And 4 months later, I swam another channel in Hawaii. And when I got to the end of that one, I realized that I could do this thing where I could evidently remove the chip that says you're tired, you need to carry on. So what was the point in what was I looking for? And I realized that what I was looking for was, can I drive my body? Can I recover? I was terrified of getting ill around my child. You know, I was terrified of not being able to provide for him and having to be, you know, him to be a carer. So for me, the approaching Ocean 7 in a single year to do them one after another became this recovery challenge for me. Have I learned enough studying around the world, learning about the body, learning about nutrition? Can I make my body recover from one channel in time to do another? Because life is an endurance event. And so that's what it became. That was the biggest compulsion, was this sense of recovery. Yeah, so that's what I was looking for, was the answer to, you know, can I trust my body? You know, and also through this period of when I'd done the English channel, I'd come to realize my little boy went to school and I was getting called in to talk about, you know, special needs. And I came to the realization that, you know, my child has special needs. He is autistic. He's incredibly sensorily driven. So life wasn't going to be normal, quote unquote, for him. He wasn't going to be able to access things as easily, maybe. So not only was I looking for my own personal quest, but I wanted to be able to show Dylan that not only could you do things that overcame your diagnoses, that you didn't have to live by other people's expectations, that you could also live completely differently. You didn't have to do a 9-to-5. You didn't have to go to school, you know, 9 to 3:30, 5 days a week if that didn't suit you. So I homeschooled him, and this challenge of adventure, he could see people make a living out of filming people. He could see people make a living out of people driving boats. He could see people make a living out of talking to people. Yeah, there were so many different lives that he could live, and to be engaged in the world around him, to teach him about glaciers by walking on them, just became this whole package, basically. So there were lots of little strands of compulsion as to what it came to, but really it came from a lack of sort of trust in myself and quest to find my own voice and to believe in my body.
Each channel had its own particular challenges, I would imagine. So what were the main differences between the different channels for you?
So for me, I kind of looked at it like a five-a-side football manager might look at their pubs team's kind of fixtures list. Each week you would have a different team, so that you would talk about team tactics, where their striker or whether the wing is or whether, you know, goal is. And it literally became like that in my head, you know. So the North Channel from Northern Ireland to Scotland, it's, you know, about 20 miles. It's going to be very cold. So you're looking at, you know, I don't want to do that when I'm fatigued. I want to do that as early on as possible. I'm going to have warm fuel. How am I going to get that warm fluid into my body? You know, I've got to have as much kind of Bioprene as possible. So, you know, I've got to really try and pack on the pounds to protect my organs for that one. And then you've got, like, say, the Molokai Channel in Hawaii, which is the longest channel. It's 28 miles if you go in a straight line, which you never do. And it's going to be between 21 and 26 degrees in the water, which whilst is lovely for an hour, after 15, the kind of fatigue that it causes in your body because your muscles relax is hugely different. So you've got the problems of dehydration and sunstroke, and, you know, you've got marine wildlife. So, you know, you might have lovely kind of dolphins swimming beside you, and you might hear whale song. You might also come face to face with a shark or slap yourself in the face with a jellyfish. You know, there's such different challenges. So for me, that was kind of a really interesting intellectual exercise of, once I'd finished one channel, looking to how to tweak what I needed to do in only a month to get ready for the next one.
Also, you know, things like the different tides and everything as well, pulling you off course. And I would imagine also, Stefan, for you, there must be different challenges as well in terms of preparing for these different environments, and also working with different, potentially different nationalities of fixers or boat owners and so on.
I think what's really interesting is that each challenge is a different narrative in a way. It's a different story in the film. As it happens, it's not just, we're not just in a different country. The first swim in Northern Ireland, the team got to know each other. So we're filming a lot. We're introducing the team, and in Catalina, Beth was ill halfway through the channel. So there was a whole other sort of narrative to cover. Hawaii was in the center, in the heart of the swim was this encounter with the shark. So there was, that brought up all sorts of stuff. So you have each swim in a way has its own narrative. And that was great because it wasn't like, oh, you have seven swims and they are epic and challenging, but aren't they all going to be the same? Aren't they all going to look the same? And so that was really important for us to bring out the different narrative of the channels, what was happening around the actual swim, and also maybe change the photography a bit. You know, some swims really lend themselves, like the Molokai really lend itself to underwater photography, drone footage, like the Pacific, Catalina or Hawaii as well. It's so vast to capture that. You then employ for some swims more of the drone photography. So we worked on that a lot. So changing the photography and also really explore what was Beth's struggle for that challenge, you know, both in the water but also outside the water, in terms of relationships with her crew or with her family, or, you know, or. And then of course we had the in-betweens as well. You know, we always went back to Somerset, and then there was the whole other story with Dylan, of course. How does Dylan fit in, and what does he think and stuff. So there was a lot. It's a complex story. That was probably one of the hardest things in really getting all these. We had to leave out so much. There's so much. I mean, Beth is such an inspiring person. We had to leave out so much because just to get a good 90 minutes of good storytelling, we just had to leave some out because it's already so complex.
Yeah, I can't imagine how long the original cut would have been, the first assembly, you know, 4 hours maybe?
Yeah, long. And we have a lot of footage, you know, we're filming with 2-3 cameras, 19 hours, there's a lot of footage, so yeah.
Definitely. And Beth, one of the things that I found most beautiful about the film was the willingness that you had to let Stefan and his camera team in with, you know, some quite painful moments in your emotional life, your relationships with your crew, your relationship with Dylan. How did you manage to build that level of belief and trust to allow that to happen? But also, how did that feel for you to be going through all that in front of a lens?
It is really difficult to sort of separate out what it would have been like if the film crew hadn't been there. I mean, one of the things that became quite apparent and was one of the hardest things to cope with was the fact that Dylan adores Stefan and Damien, who was behind the camera. But as soon as they picked up the camera, he couldn't cope because all of a sudden he wasn't able to he couldn't ignore them, but he wasn't, they weren't able to relate to him because they were working. And, you know, that became hugely problematic because obviously, you know, giving Stefan what he needed was giving him time away from Dylan between the swims, but Dylan needed me to be mum as much as possible so that it would free me up to do the swims. And it really sort of pulled me apart, if I'm honest. And the swims were the easiest part of this challenge in the end. You know, everyone said, oh, this, you know, I can't imagine doing these swims. The swims were the simplest and easiest parts for me to cope with and were actually a relief. You know, spending time alone with Dylan was so essential between the swims. And, you know, my sort of relationship with him is absolutely sort of rock solid, and he was my absolute champion. So yeah, a lot of the time for me, it was the juggling that was hugely problematic. I mean, letting Stefan get as much access to me, you know, it was very, very difficult to kind of sort of bargain and barter time away from each to kind of give it. I was really sort of piggy in the middle of two very different requirements. And then to get in the water, as you know, I think I've said, the first swim, I had a tummy bug, which I didn't realize I had a tummy bug until about 6 hours into a swim, which should have taken about 10 hours, ended up taking 19. So there was I, not just feeling rotten, but actually being sick and it coming out of both ends and everywhere. And when you've got a tummy bug, you really want to be in a private, quiet, private toilet, you know, public toilet. Yeah. So you can have your friend pass chicken soup through. You don't want a documentary team filming every aspect. And whilst you are trying to swim 21 miles on this sort of first epic quest that you've managed to start. So yeah, the requirements pulled on me were huge. And yeah, that it was interesting. Thank goodness that, you know, Stefan and I, you know, are such good mates now. And he, I mean, I trusted him because I saw how he was with Dylan and the conversations we had. So, you know, for example, Dylan expresses more autistic traits than are in the film. And one of the things Dylan does is a lot of stimming. So he sort of grips his hand to his face and sort of makes noises, which is very calming for him. And, you know, Stefan and I had a lot of conversations about how much to express Dylan's differences, seeing that Dylan was going to, you know, have to grow up with this and would he feel okay when he's older? You know, so knowing that Stefan cared about that side of stuff allowed me to then trust what was going to, you know, be put in film.
Yeah, very much so. And also, you know, your relationships with your support team as well,
yeah.
You know, which became difficult at some point, I think.
It completely exploded. I mean, one of the sort of saddest things was that, you know, the separate money aspect of it meant that Stefan and the guys didn't come to New Zealand with us, which was why that film, that channel was shown from my family's perspective in England, what it's like, you know, for the people left at home.
Right.
So in New Zealand, the whole team exploded. You know, I mean, literally, I had no team after New Zealand and they weren't there to kind of film it. So some of it, the story had to be told sort of extraneously after the fact, almost. They had to sort of make a cohesive storyline out of the fact that the team exploded. And they've done a beautiful job to sort of pick through, you know, what was comfortable. Well, not, it's not comfortable, but, you know, as true as they could make it whilst not having been there, which, you know, they did a really good job of having other voices. I mean, my mum, you know, I love my mum to bits and we have a very good, strong relationship. But my mum didn't support my swimming. And, you know, even up until the point of Ocean 7, really struggled with it. And through having done this sort of really introspective process and her having to have interviews on, you know, 3-4 hour long conversations about how she feels, our relationship moved hugely. So it wasn't just a journey for me doing Ocean 7 in a year. You know, my mum had to confront her version of motherhood, and it has actually built her confidence that I don't think just because I do it differently, what she did wasn't right. If she hadn't mothered me how she did, I wouldn't be as strong as I am. And, you know, we've now had those conversations and she feels much more secure in her sense of mothering and has given me my sense of mothering that it's okay to do it my way too. which, you know, that's such a strong thread through the film, is these different voices where, you know, my mum sort of starts off being very much the voice of reason, you know, saying, well, I think it's something that maybe she should do when, you know, her Dylan's older and she's a single mum, and that is absolutely valid. And most people will think, you know, what are you doing? But my perspective is, this is my motherhood. And if I had a penis, actually, people wouldn't even ask this question. But I don't have a penis, so people are asking it. Let's have this conversation. Motherhood is motherhood, and I am a mum. Mm. And this is my life. This is what my motherhood looks like, which I think is a hugely valid conversation that we need to have.
Absolutely. And the thing that I think is so impressive about the film is that, you know, it's enormously supportive of all points of view that are expressed in the film. It's very balanced, and everyone's right in their own way, you know.
Yeah, one of the things I loved about it when I first saw it was it's such an intelligent piece of filmmaking, because it allows you to disagree with the person sitting next to you and to then need to go away and have those conversations about whether I should have started, you know, what the choices that I made, what happens with the crew. It's all okay, and it's all conversations that need to be had.
So we had the theatrical release of the film in the UK, and did you go around and do lots of Q&A type events related to the film?
Yeah, we had, after the festival circuit, which was really good, we had world premiere in Sheffield, the international film, the documentary festival there, and then a very rewarding festival run with some awards. We then decided to have cinema release in the UK, because that was the whole point of it in the first place. We wanted to make a film on the cinema. We wanted it for people to really experience as closely as they could this experience of swimming, especially. And but most distributors that we talked to said, you know, don't even think about it. You know, there's no money in it. We're not gonna invest money in putting this into the cinema, because it's expensive, of course. But then we decided. I really wanted to do it. The cinematographer was really, Damien was very keen to do it. So we then, in the end, we decided to go via a sort of on-demand platform, a sort of cinema for the people type thing. So where they work very closely with all the cinema chains, and then you sort of work with them to book your own screens. And so we started very small. I was totally convinced that there is a really big audience out there, and that I wanted to show them the film. And so we started sort of in London, and then we moved to Somerset, and then slowly word got around, and people in different parts of the UK asked whether they could see the film, and then they booked cinemas, or we booked cinemas nearby. So in the end, we had like a 10-month long cinema run in over 60, nearly 70 cinemas, all the way from Cornwall to the Orkneys. So really, really satisfying to show the film and see the people enjoying it, and all the Q&As, going on the road with the film, and all the Q&As afterwards, and talking to people afterwards was really so satisfying. And also doing it with Beth was great, because we could travel together and see what came out of all this work. So that was great. And then we had our TV premiere last November, and now we're going on to demand. So video on demand here in the UK and the US and pretty much all over the world. So Australia, Canada as well. I thought the making it and the editing was hard, but distributing a British independent documentary is equally hard, if not harder. Yeah. So the film will come out. If anybody who's interested, all the info is on our website, Against the Tides Film, or follow us on social media. All the information is there. Please pre-order the film. That's great for a documentary. It increases visibility. So pre-order the film and then buy it. Spread the word if you like it. That will be great. Yeah.
Absolutely, and I'll make sure that all the information is not just in the outro that I'll record later, but also on all the show notes and all our social media and everything is going to be doing whatever we can to support you, because I've seen lots of swimming films over the last year in particular, since I've really reacquainted myself with it, and you know, you've really created something exceptional, and you know, the story is compelling, it's human, it's very moving, and just a beautiful watch. And
well, thank you very much. Also, maybe what you say is that because it's a present tense documentary, you never know quite where it is. The film does have a very surprising, unexpected ending. So that might also...
Yeah, I was deliberately avoiding spoilers as best I could in our conversation. So I think just to finish off, Beth, what did you discover, I guess, over this whole process? And what's next?
Well, I mean, for me, Ocean 7 was an absolutely successful project for me because when I finished my swims, I came to hear my voice. I came to trust my body. And I cannot describe to you the empowerment of realizing I have nothing to prove, not even to myself. And the joy of sort of going back to my boy and saying, you know, that's it. I'm here. I've arrived. What would you like to do with it? And for him to turn around and say, well, I want to adventure more. And for me to give the reins over, he turned around. I said, OK, you can choose our next adventure. And he said, without breaking stride, oh, we're going to go and stay in a yurt in Alaska in the winter, in the snow. And to the pleasure of having been able to give him that, which we did 3 Februarys ago, we went and stayed, hiked out with our stuff on a meat sled through waist deep snow for 2 hours to this little yurt on the edge of a frozen river in the middle of nowhere in Alaska. It was amazing. So he's led me then. He wanted me to jump in an icy hole in the snow. So a couple of summers ago, we went to the Hintertux Glacier in Austria, where I hiked inside this glacier in natural tunnels and swam in 0 degree water, 30 meters below the surface of a glacier. Last October.
That was amazing. It was incredible.
And then so the next thing that he wanted me to do was to swim past an iceberg, which I would love to as well. And we were due to do last October. We were all set to go to Svalbard in north of Norway. So we were due to go to Svalbard, do a bit of dog sledding, hopefully see the Northern Lights. And I was going to, swim past an iceberg. That's still on the cards because obviously COVID sort of, set to. So for me, the whole joy of it is that I trust my body. I trust my voice to listen to my body. And me and my boy are, off on adventures.
Thank you so much for your time. And thank you for such an inspiring but sensitive piece of work. It's just a remarkable film. And it's going to be available from March the 1st on all the VOD channels. And I'll make sure that there's as much promotion for it as possible, because I thought it's a remarkable piece of work. And
thank you very much, Pat.
It was very funny, actually. When I first saw the trailer, I didn't actually know about the release already and everything. And I just got in touch and said, so is this available? That was me speaking as the film distributor going, is
Where were you 2 years ago?
The company had barely existed 2 years ago. We've only been running a couple of years, but I genuinely love the film, and I really want to support you as much as I can.
Great, thank you so much.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
Thank you once again to Beth and Stefan for sparing the time to talk about this remarkable film. And just to remind you that Against the Tides is released on demand from the 1st of March. You can get it from all the usual video on demand companies. And I would recommend very much that you rent or buy the film. It's a beautiful film. You can find more information on www.againstthetidesfilm.com. And of course, I'm going to be putting lots of information in the show notes and in the Joy of Swimming discussion group, which I hope you're all members of. If not, please go on to Facebook, look for the Joy of Swimming discussion group, and I'd very much love to have you in there. Thanks also to Alex Rowley from ARPR, who brought the film to my attention and arranged the interview with Beth and Stefan. Thanks so much for listening. As always, I'm so grateful that you give me the time on such a regular basis to listen to the podcast. I genuinely couldn't do it without you listening, and I'm so beside myself with joy that you're enjoying it. And of course, please feel free to leave a review or a rating, or preferably both, on your podcast catcher of choice. And also just pop into the Joyous Swimming discussion group and have a chat. I'm always in there, and I'd very much like to hear from you, because your feedback is what helps make this a better experience for me and for everyone. Thanks once again for listening. Stay safe and happy swimming. Thank you for listening to the Joy of Swimming podcast, hosted by Pat Kelman. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast by pressing the subscribe button on the podcast catcher of your choice. Music by Phil Innes.